Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, January 18th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Stocks fall and Treasury yields jump as Wall Street gets back to work.
Oil continues its rally, hitting the highest level since 2014.
Goldman Sachs kicks off a busy week for earnings.
And airlines warn of catastrophic disruptions tied to the rollout of 5G.
Authorities say the woman killed in a New York subway attack by a homeless man was an advocate for the homeless. Plus, the Senate is scheduled to debate a voting rights bill today. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Knicks and Nets suffered holiday matinee losses. A win for the Islanders. The Rams beat the Cardinals in the NFL playoffs.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are tumbling this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 53 points, Dow futures down 262, and NASDAQ futures down 282. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 1.81%, and the yield on the two-year, 1.04%. Nathan.
Karen, the markets are the focus this morning. Treasury yields, as you mentioned, are jumping while stocks continue to slide. Let's get the very latest live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. 2- and 10-year Treasury yields up to levels not seen since before the pandemic. Investors increasingly concerned that elevated inflation will force the Fed to tighten policy faster than expected. Higher rates means future profits are worth less today, and that's hurting growth stocks, especially technology. Right now, NASDAQ futures are down 1.8%. What could come to the rescue is company profits. Strategists at J.P. Morgan Chase do say global corporate earnings will deliver significant beats this year. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. We're also seeing oil on the move this morning. Brent crude is trading at the highest level in more than 7 years. We get more from Bloomberg's Paul Wallace in Dubai.
There's strong consensus that Omicron is not going to have that much of an impact on oil demand. And at the same time, you've got some of the world's biggest producers, oil producers, including many OPEC members, very much struggling to raise production. So the thinking is that especially as we go further into the year when demand should be rising quite strongly, we're going to see supply problems.
Bloomberg's Paul Wallace says Goldman Sachs is predicting $100 oil in the third quarter. And checking prices right now, NYMEX crude oil is up about 1.8% at $85.29 a barrel. Brent is up 1.3% at $87.60.
Well, earnings is the other big item to watch this morning, Karen. Bank results continue to roll in this week, and Goldman Sachs reports ahead of today's opening bell. We get a preview from Bloomberg Global Finance correspondent Shanali Basak.
We've had the first set of earnings for JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo. And with fixed income trading expectations pretty much below expectations for the biggest of the firms, that sets the bar pretty high for Goldman Sachs, which has had a banner year in commodities trading. The hope is that they will outperform expectations. Yet we're also going to watch expenses because those traders will need to get paid more to be retained. At JP Morgan, expenses are going up and the expectation is the same for Goldman Sachs. So what will profitability look like moving forward? In New York, I'm Shanali Basak, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Shanali, thank you. Let's turn to the pandemic now. The latest debate centers on whether the pandemic is now shifting to an endemic. That would put COVID-19 on even footing with diseases like the flu. Dr. Anthony Fauci says it's too early to tell.
It's an open question as to whether or not Omicron is going to be the live virus vaccination that everyone is hoping for, because you have such a great deal of variability with new variants emerging.
Dr. Anthony Fauci made the comments yesterday at the World Economic Forum's Davos Agenda online conference.
In the meantime, Karen, we're getting early results from Israel on the effectiveness of a fourth vaccine dose. Let's get the details on this new study live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. A trial in Israel shows that a fourth dose of COVID-19, the vaccine from Pfizer, that is, it only offered partial defense against the Omicron variant. And overall, the lead researcher says shots which were more effective against the previous strains offer less protection with Omicron. Israel started rolling out a fourth dose to some residents back in December, but the lead researcher says results did not support a wider rollout of the whole population. And last week, the European Union warned that frequent COVID-19 boosters could weaken the immune system and may not be feasible. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. While the pandemic is once again impacting the Olympics, China is halting ticket sales to the general public. Instead, Beijing will invite select groups of spectators to attend the Games. We get more from Bloomberg's Yvonne Mann in Hong Kong.
This is quite a reversal because originally the plan was to already ban foreign spectators, but they were supposed to allow residents to be spectators for the Olympic Games, and they were supposed to operate in this sort of closed-loop system. But that is all changing as we speak.
Bloomberg's Yvonne Mann says these changes come just 3 weeks before the Olympic Games kickoff in Beijing.
Turning to Europe now, Karen, political turmoil is in focus in the UK. A former top aide to Boris Johnson's accusing the prime minister of lying about parties held at Downing Street during the pandemic. Let's go to London, get the latest from Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Ewan?
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Dominic Cummings says the UK leader was aware of and permitted a drinks party at Downing Street at the height of the strict lockdown in the first wave of the pandemic. That account from the former top aide to the Prime Minister, who's been outspoken in his criticism, conflicts with what Boris Johnson recently told Parliament. In London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Back here in the U.S., the pending rollout of 5G service is hitting fresh roadblocks. Airlines warn federal officials of catastrophic disruptions if wireless companies continue to deploy 5G services. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The trade association Airlines for America warns the traveling and shipping public could be impacted by the new signals, which they say could interfere with altitude measuring instruments. AT&T and Verizon already have an agreement with federal regulators to launch this new service on January 19th. In a memo to staff seen by Bloomberg News, JetBlue CEO Robin Hayes says the airline faces, quote, the potential for significant disruptions to flights starting tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thanks. S&P futures now down 56 points. Dow futures down 282. NASDAQ futures lower by 294 points. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. It's now 6:07 on Wall Street. We're at 31 degrees in Central Park. We got an accident in Queens, westbound LIE at Junction Boulevard. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. Police in New York City say the man accused of killing a woman by pushing her into the path of a subway is homeless, emotionally disturbed, and under police guard at a hospital. Marshall Simon is expected to be arraigned for killing 40-year-old Michelle Goh Saturday morning in the Times Square subway station. The killing comes less than a month into the first term of Mayor Eric Adams, who campaigned on making the city safer.
When you have an incident like this, the perception is what we're fighting against.
Adams also says the victim was a management consultant and did volunteer work to help the homeless. New York Junior League President Dana Cassidy.
She clearly had a very strong passion for working one-on-one with these populations in need.
Cassidy called Goh a compassionate soul. As for the 61-year-old suspect, he was arrested and confessed shortly after. The Senate is scheduled to debate a voting rights bill today, allowing more access to the ballot box. The measure is expected to face a steep hurdle when Senate Democrats challenge the filibuster rule that requires 60 votes to advance legislation. Since the 2020 election, 19 states have passed bills restricting access to voting. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand says a 19-story building that was ravaged by a deadly fire earlier this month should not be exempt from having a sprinkler system installed, no matter how old it is. Senator Gillibrand toured the 19-story building in the Bronx where 17 people were killed.
We also learned from the firefighters that an old building like this is grandfathered in and doesn't have sprinklers. That's unacceptable.
Senator Gillibrand and Congressman Richie Torres, who represents that section of the Bronx where the fire happened, are sponsoring legislation to have heat sensors in apartments. A year-old report by Washington's Afghanistan watchdog has now been declassified and shows that it warned back in early 2021 that the Afghan Air Force would collapse without critical U.S. aid and training. That was months before President Joe Biden announced the end to America's longest war. Officials are still waiting to learn the full extent of damage, number of casualties in the Pacific island of Tonga, after a series of undersea volcanic eruptions triggered a powerful tsunami. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 6:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Looked like Odell Beckham was going to be a star wideout for the Giants for a long time. The Giants gave him a big contract, and then the recently departed general manager Dave Gettleman famously said, well, we didn't sign him to trade him, and then he traded him to Cleveland. Didn't work out there. Beckham went to the Rams. He was a big factor in their playoff win last night.
Here comes the snap to Stafford. Looking left, throwing left, the fade to OBJ. Airborne with a two-handed grab. Touchdown, OBJ. Touchdown, LA.
Rams radio, the call. Beckham later threw a 40-yard pass. The Rams led the Cardinals 28-0. They won 34-11. Matthew Stafford, his first season in LA, does something he never did in his 12 years in Detroit. He wins a playoff game, and the Rams go to Tampa Bay on Sunday. The Giants' search to replace Gettleman has seen them conduct 9 Zoom interviews. Reportedly, they've cut the field to 5. We'll now begin to bring candidates in. Nixon won 3 in a row, 5 straight at home, and Charlotte was without its young star LaMelo Ball. Yet at the Garden, the Hornets won easily, 97-87. It was only that close as the Knicks made up some ground at the end. Miles Bridges, 38 points for the Hornets. He had 22 in the first quarter. Another home game tonight, Knicks in Minnesota. The Nets without the injured Kevin Durant lost at Cleveland 114-107. KD's going to be out the next 4 to 6 weeks. The Islanders coming on after the slow start, a 4-1 win over Philadelphia. Battle of Brooklyn, LIU beats St. Francis. Daniel Medvedev, easy win at the Australian Open. He's now the top seed without Novak Djokovic. Leyla Fernandez lost her first round match. She went to last year's U.S. Open final. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. S&P futures now down 53 points. Dow futures down 266. NASDAQ futures are lower by 287 points. The 10-year down 7/32, yield 1.80%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a tri-state Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Trade crypto for less coin with commissions just 12 to 18 basis points and no hidden spreads or markups. Learn more at ibkr.com/crypto. Treasury yields are surging, NASDAQ futures tumbling, and global stocks being dragged down by concern that central banks will have to raise rates sooner than expected. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 53 points this morning. Dow futures down 269. NASDAQ futures down 277, down 1.8%. The DAX in Germany is down 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 1.80%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.03%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.8%, up $1.47 at $85.29 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $5.50 at $18.11 an ounce. The euro 1.1390 against the dollar, British pound 1.3614, the yen at 114.70, and Bitcoin this morning at $41,900. And Goldman Sachs is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Senators are returning to Washington under intense pressure to pass voting legislation in the face of stark criticism from civil rights leaders. The Senate is set to launch debate today after civil rights leaders implored them to change the rules and break a Republican-led filibuster that has stalled the voting bill. A trade association representing major U.S. airlines asked Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and the nation's top communications and aviation regulators to prevent wireless carriers from implementing 5G services close to airports. In the NFL, the Rams rolled over the Cardinals 34-11. So here is the breakdown for the divisional round playoffs. In the NFC, the Rams face Tampa Bay. Green Bay hosts the 49ers. In the AFC, the Bengals are at the Titans. The Bills are at the Chiefs. In the NBA, the Knicks and Nets lost. The Celtics and Wizards won. In the NHL, the Islanders won. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks for coming up to 620 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. And we want to get an update on the pandemic now, as we're starting to see debate building over whether the Omicron variant is going to be what brings us from the pandemic to an endemic when it comes to COVID-19. Let's get some insights now from Gigi Granvall, professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. I want to get right into this, Dr. Granvall. Dr. Fauci says it's too soon to say whether Omicron is the variant that makes COVID endemic. At the same time, we've heard from the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, saying we may get somewhere closer to normal by the spring. Where do you see things going in terms of the pandemic?
Well, I think both of those things could be sort of true. We really don't know where things are going to go. There's no law of nature that says that there couldn't be another variant of concern that we'll have to deal with. But Omicron is going to keep causing infections, and it's not quite done with the world yet, too. So I don't think we're really at an endemic stage, but hopefully there will be a lot more immunity in our population at the end of this so that we can be a little bit closer to normal.
What do you look for to determine whether we are getting closer to the endemic phase?
I would like to see hospitals not be quite so strained. Right now, we have so many new infections that are landing people in the hospital. Thankfully, Omicron is milder than Delta, but perhaps not much milder than the original version of SARS-CoV-2. So we need to still try to convince those who haven't yet that vaccination is going to save their lives and also save our healthcare, because lots of surgeries and things that people really need to have done are being canceled right now because hospitals can't do them.
When we see Omicron apparently presenting as less severe than earlier strains, what does that say about what the next variant could look like, the next variant of concern? Could it go one way or the other?
Well, viruses evolve to be more transmissible. They evolve to cause more infections, to be able to spread further. That's part of their fitness. How much damage they do to the host is really pretty variable. So there's no reason why another variant couldn't be more dangerous than Omicron. But hopefully it won't. And it's really just a matter of surveillance and trying to pick this up as soon as possible.
Where do you see our surveillance looking right now? Are we doing adequate surveillance of COVID as a country?
We are sequencing a lot of samples, a lot more than we had before. The problem is the delay. The information is not getting to the hands of public health as quickly as would be ideal. I think part of that is because we don't have this in the public health departments. We still have public health departments that hopefully not too many that use fax machines. So it's really about, we need to modernize the public health so that they can use these tools. And so the decision time isn't as long.
In our last minute here, Dr. Granvall, I want to get your reaction to a new study out of Israel that suggests a fourth dose of Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine might not be effective against Omicron. Does that imply something about the need for boosters?
We'll have to see. They have very careful controlled studies in Israel. They have a lot of data on people so that they can monitor the effect of these additional vaccine doses. It looks, if that's the case, then we'll have to see whether a more specific booster, perhaps to Omicron, that's designed to counter Omicron or the next variant, or will be better. So we have to go with the data that we have.
All right. Thank you, as always, Gigi Granvall, professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, which is supported by Michael Bloomberg, the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg Radio's parent company, Bloomberg LP. Right now, S&P futures are down 54 points. Dow futures down 275. NASDAQ futures down 282 points. That's a decline of 1.8%. The 10-year Treasury is down 7/32. The yield, 1.81%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.03%. NYMEX crude up 1.7%, up $1.45 at $85.27 a barrel. Just ahead, we'll have the latest on the market sell-off, and Goldman Sachs set to report earnings as we check the five things you need to know to start your day on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather, sunny, breezy, a high near 35 today, mostly cloudy, mid-40s tomorrow with a wintry mess tomorrow night. It'll end early Thursday and turn partly sunny with a high near 35, currently 31 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers Global Analyst. Global Analyst helps you find new global investment opportunities to diversify your portfolio and discover undervalued companies. Try Global Analyst today at ibkr.com/GA. Up first, stocks are falling and Treasury yields are climbing to begin the week. And we get the details live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Karen, markets pricing in a more aggressive rate hike path from the Fed as it looks to stomp out inflation. 2-year Treasury yield soaring above 1% for the first time since 2020. Higher rates mean future company profits are worth less, and that's hurting growth stocks. Right now, NASDAQ futures down 1.8%. And J.P. Morgan's fixed income chief, Bob Michael, is warning stock bulls not to believe the central bank will meet every market hiccup with easier policy. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Radio.
And John, oil is extending gains this morning, hitting the highest level in more than 7 years. Geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and easing concerns about the pandemic are being cited for the surge. Right now, NYMEX crude's up 1.7% at $85.27 a barrel, while Brent is up 1.3% at $87.59.
Nathan, fourth quarter earnings season kicks into high gear this week. Goldman Sachs reports this morning. We get more from Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky.
Goldman's investment banking fee strength will be a highlight, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. Trading revenue should be solid, with equities doing better relative to fixed income compared to a year ago. Costs, especially compensation trends, will help gauge the profitability outlook for 2022. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Larry, thanks. Turning to the pandemic now, we're getting early results from an Israeli study involving a fourth vaccine dose. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Renita?
Nathan, a trial in Israel shows that a fourth dose of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine only offered partial defense against the Omicron variant. And overall, the lead researcher says shots which were more effective against previous strains offered less protection with Omicron. But it's worth noting that these in the study had only slight symptoms or none at all. Israel started rolling out a fourth dose to some residents back in December, but the lead researcher says results did not support a wider rollout to the whole population. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. Another story we're watching has the pending rollout of 5G service hitting fresh roadblocks. U.S. airlines are warning of catastrophic disruptions from tomorrow's scheduled deployment of 5G wireless service. A trade organization urged government regulators to prevent 5G from being implemented within 2 miles of anywhere aircraft fly.
And it's now 6:33 on Wall Street, 31 degrees in Central Park. We're still dealing with a crash on the westbound LIE at Junction Boulevard. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Police in New York City say the man accused of killing a woman by pushing her into the path of a subway is expected to be arraigned. Marshall Simon, who is homeless, is under police guard in a hospital for killing 40-year-old Michelle Goh Saturday morning in the Times Square subway station. Goh did volunteer work to help the homeless. New York Junior League president Dana Cassidy.
She is a very compassionate soul who wanted to be rewarded by that direct impact and directly working with those individuals.
Junior League president Cassidy says Goh was also a consultant with a management firm, Deloitte. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is enjoying high favorability ratings in his first couple of weeks in office. According to a new Siena poll out today, overall 63% of city residents have a positive impression of the former police captain, compared to a fifth who have a negative opinion. Senators are returning to Washington under intense pressure to pass voting legislation in the face of stark criticism from civil rights leaders. The Senate is set to launch debate today after pressure to change the rules and break a Republican-led filibuster that has stalled the voting bill. Members of the Colleyville, Texas synagogue that was the scene of a hostage siege Saturday held a healing ceremony last evening. Four members of the congregation, Beth Israel, including the rabbi, were held for 10 hours before escaping unharmed. Rabbi Charlie Crichton Walker led the service.
We stand together against hatred, bigotry, and violence. We stand together in love and support of each other.
The suspect, identified as British national Malik Faisal Akram, died at the scene. Athletes headed to the Olympics next month are being warned about the security of their cell phones. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports.
The athletes are being told that the Great Firewall will be partially disabled inside their Olympic bubble, and they will have access to Facebook and YouTube. But along with that, the U.S. and allies are warning that some companies it accuses of installing spyware and malware already are Olympic sponsors, and that they could spy and affect phone usage in the future. Larry Diamond, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, suggests buying a cheap burner phone to use and leaving the expensive smartphones at home. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Just about 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Hi, Nathan. The first ever Monday night playoff game. Not much of a game. The fourth blowout of Wild Card Weekend, where home teams went 5-1 in L.A. site of next month's Super Bowl. The Rams beat the slumping Cardinals. Matthew Stafford's first career playoff victory. He threw for two touchdowns for Kyler Murray. Two interceptions. One was costly.
Ready to call for. Three to his right. Takes the snap. Sets the laces. Bounces in the pocket. Hit from behind. Flicks it forward. It is intercepted. Intercepted. A pick six. David Long Jr. plucks it at the one. He's got an interception return for a touchdown.
Rams radio the call. Rams won 34-11. Held Arizona just 183 yards of offense. The Cardinals began the year 7-0. Just last month, they were an NFL best 10-2. And then they finished going 1-5. The Rams advance, play Sunday at Tampa Bay. The Raiders fired general manager Mike Mayock, not knowing about Rich Bisaccia, who finished the season as interim coach. The Cowboys say no plans to fire Mike McCarthy, despite the loss of the 49ers. MLK matinee at the Garden, one of the Knicks' worst games. Trailed Charlotte by 18 at the half. The Hornets won 97-87. Miles Bridges scored a career-high 38. Knicks missed 10 free throws and 15 turnovers. They're home again tonight to play Minnesota. Nets began life without the injured Kevin Durant. Lost in Cleveland, 114-107. Kyrie Irving led Brooklyn with 27. Nets are playing a lot of road games right now, and they are the only games that Irving can play. They're in Washington tomorrow. Islanders at home beat Philadelphia 4-1. Got to within a game of 500. And San Jose, a club record, 5 goals for the Sharks' Timo Meier. He had a hat trick still in the first period. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks. Some of the names moving in the pre-market as the sell-off continues. We're joined by Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. So we are seeing a broad equity sell-off this morning, Kriti, and I'm sure you're watching bank stocks ahead of Goldman earnings.
Exactly. Well, a broad sell-off indeed. And you would think that with those yields higher, that would mean the financials are higher too. They are not, Nathan, especially as you come across those earnings. A lot of that kind of expectations built in from last week's earnings story. I'm going to look at Goldman Sachs here because that's the big bank that everyone's waiting for this morning. GS is your ticker, down 0.4%. PNC is the other regional one that you want to keep an eye on. PNC is also the ticker, down 2.6% in the pre-market. Like I said, with yields higher, the expectation was that financials should be higher as well, but the yield curve is also flattening, which would affect those interest rate margins that you would get on those loans, especially after last week's big earnings miss. JP Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo, some kind of not so whatever the opposite of optimism is pessimism. There you go.
There you
some
go.
Pessimism
yeah.
going into Goldman's earnings this morning. That being said, you also have some pessimism when it comes to those big tech stocks. Apple, for example, AAPL is your ticker, down 1.7% in the pre-market. MSFT is the ticker from Microsoft, down 2%. Apple and Microsoft are actually two of Dan Ives' calls that he's still bullish on. Remember, we like to separate those from the pack simply because they are hardcore tech companies as opposed to more media companies like Facebook, for example. Speaking of Facebook shares, or I should say Meta platform shares, FB is still the ticker, though, down 2% in the pre-market. Once again, as you see yields higher, tech is going to be extremely responsive. But right now, a lot of the selling is coming from those hedge funds, Nathan.
Well, along with higher yields, Creedy, of course, we're watching a big gains, a rally in the oil market this morning. What's that mean for energy stocks?
Yeah, the one part of the market that's actually showing some green this morning, and this is really important because this actually has once again to do with hedge funds. I said hedge funds are driving the selling in tech. Well, they're also boosting their positions in oil. Part of that is that inflationary call, the idea that the global economy still needs oil. It's still recovering. The other part of it is simply geopolitical tensions, Houthi rebels sending some drone strikes into the UAE and some concerns that Russia can't meet its production obligations, all of that boosting oil prices. And that is trickling into the energy space. Like you mentioned, Occidental, OXY, is going to be the ticker you want to keep an eye on, up 1.2% in the pre-market. Apache as well, APA, up just shy of 2%. And lastly, Devon Energy, DVN, up 0.6%, Nathan.
Thanks for this, Creedy. Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Creedy Gupta with us this morning as we watch the selling continue more broadly across the market. S&P futures are down 51 points. Dow futures down 256. NASDAQ futures are lower by 274 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 8/32. The yield 1.81%. Yield on the 2-year 1.03%. And NYMEX crude up 1.8%, up $1.49.85.31. for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather. Sunny, breezy, the high only near 35 today. Mid-40s, mostly cloudy tomorrow. Wintry mess tomorrow night. It clears out early Thursday, partly sunny. High near 35 degrees. Right now, 31.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are falling this morning. We enter the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure amid a jump in global bond yields. Dow futures currently down 245 points. S&P's dropped 50, while the NASDAQ futures are lower by 264. The U.S. 10-year yield at 1.82%. Gold is down 7. And oil is climbing, with Brent jumping to the highest level since 2014. Bitcoin is little changed, while European markets are also in the red this morning. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, Empire Manufacturing, and at 10 o'clock, the NAHB Housing Market Index. Regarding earnings this morning, look for Goldman Sachs to report around 7:30. And in other news, Bank of New York Mellon assets under management beat estimates. Wrapping things up, Under Armour was raised to outperform at BMO. Dollar General cut to equal weight at Morgan Stanley. And Conoco was raised to buy over at Goldman Sachs. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Later today, Senate Democrats will force a vote on the right to vote in every state, even though the final bill will likely fail. Since the 2020 election, 19 states have passed 34 bills restricting access to voting. A fourth dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was insufficient to prevent infection with the Omicron variant of COVID-19. That's according to preliminary data from a trial in Israel. In the NFL, the Rams rolled over the Cardinals 34-11. In the NBA, the Knicks and Nets lost. The Celtics and Wizards won. In the NHL, the Islanders won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
How the pandemic ripped a hole in working-age America. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Deaths among working-age Americans were up more than 40% over pre-pandemic averages last summer and fall. For a few weeks in August and September, they were up by more than 60%. Most of these excess deaths were directly attributed to COVID-19. Many that weren't were probably COVID-related. For Americans overall, the summer COVID wave was less deadly than last winter's. For those under 65, it was much worse. The most obvious explanation is simply that those under 65 are less likely to be vaccinated against COVID than their elders. COVID deaths among working-age adults have been almost entirely among the unvaccinated, and the overall increase in deaths was much higher in low-vax states than high-vax ones. Life insurers have taken note and have been raising premiums in low-vax areas. I'm Justin Fox. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. We turn to news and science and technology now with a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, which announced that renowned scholar and educational leader Dr. Tech Lim will join the university as NJIT's ninth president. Learn more at njit.edu. Now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. A study from Israel found that a fourth dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was not enough to prevent infection by the Omicron variant. As you've been reporting, researchers say the vaccine did raise antibody levels, but that only offered a partial defense against Omicron. Get ready to learn more Greek letters. Scientists warn that Omicron's whirlwind advance practically ensures it will not be the last version of the coronavirus to worry the world. Every infection provides a chance for the virus to mutate, and Omicron has an edge over its predecessors. It spreads way faster despite emerging on a planet with a stronger patchwork of immunity from vaccines and prior illness. And Asia's richest man is buying a majority stake in an India robotic startup company to fuel his tech ambitions. Billionaire Mukesh Ambani is investing in Adverb Technologies, which uses robots to make e-commerce warehouses and energy production more efficient. Ambani is investing in technology as competition from rivals such as Amazon intensifies in India's booming e-commerce market. And that's a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. Nathan.
Thanks, Karen. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's just about 6:52 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the Senate getting ready to debate voting rights after a Martin Luther King Day march in Washington, vulnerable House Democrats calling for a new strategy on Build Back Better, and a bipartisan Senate delegation meeting with leaders in Ukraine amid rising tensions with Russia. Let's bring in Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins for all that's happening in the nation's capital following the Martin Luther King holiday. We are watching for that Senate debate on voting rights to begin as soon as today, Emily?
Yes, the Senate's going to be back today, and we do expect that debate to begin. Could potentially go into tomorrow, maybe even a little bit later in the week. This will sort of give the chance for lawmakers, Democrats and Republicans, to talk about the bill, for Democrats, their support of the bill. But it's ultimately going to wind up with the bill failing. It needs to clear another 60-vote threshold if it wants to continue. And right now, it just doesn't have the votes to do that, even though all Democrats support the bill. They don't have those 10 Republicans who support it as well. And so this is something that when you talk to Democrats about the importance of this, they talk about the ability to debate the bill, to say their piece, to message on it a little bit. But at this point, there's really no sign that this is going to wind up changing any sort of laws.
But what about the idea of changing Senate rules to get the bill passed, the idea of changes to the filibuster? What kind of pressure is there on the Democrats who've been sort of resistant to that idea?
There is a lot of pressure on Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, but to be honest, the pressure has been on them for a while, and Senator Kyrsten Sinema made it very, very clear right before the Senate left on Thursday that she was not going to be supportive of any sort of change to the Senate's filibuster rules, and you would need her support to go along with things. It sounds like Joe Manchin's not swayed either. I mean, look, people talk about putting pressure on Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema. I feel like this has just been a huge theme of the last year. Just put pressure on them, put pressure on them. We've seen internal pressure, external pressure, pressure from the White House, pressure from their colleagues, pressure from activist groups. At this point, there's really no indication to those of us who watch and follow Congress that Manchin has moved at all on this issue. In fact, he and Kirsten Sinema seem to have only grown further entrenched into the idea that they need to keep the filibuster as it is.
Something I know you're watching very closely as well is progress on President Biden's economic agenda. It seems like that had been pushed off to the side a little bit with the focus now on voting rights. But we're starting to hear a lot more calls from vulnerable Democrats in the House heading into the midterms for a change in strategy so they can run on something in terms of an economic agenda.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats really do want this bill to pass. Even the Democrats who are a little more moderate, who might not be supportive of everything in the bill, realize that there are really components in there that they can run on for their base, that Democratic voters want, and that they can really tout to their constituents back home. And so you are seeing them begin to ask to say, hey, like, let's go ahead and break this bill down. Maybe let's move only certain pieces. Let's try and find another way to do this. We are also seeing reporting from Reuters this morning saying that the White House is working on a new proposal for the so-called Build Back Better plan that would keep climate change measures, but it would pare down items like the child tax credit and paid family leave. And this is really in line with what Senator Joe Manchin was calling for. He said that these programs should be much more targeted, much more specific, but he has been supportive of some of the climate provisions that are currently in the legislation. So we're going to see White House officials going up to Congress this week, trying to talk with members and trying to make some progress on this bill.
In our last minute here, Emily, before the Senate begins the debate on voting rights this week, a handful of senators have been in Ukraine.
Yes, a bipartisan group of lawmakers went to Ukraine with the idea of showing the U.S. support and Congress's support for Ukraine as they face these continuing tensions with Russia. The lawmaker said their goal was just to send a very clear message about where they stand, that they stand with Ukraine. This comes as, you know, there has been sort of further tensions. You've seen Biden and Putin have discussions. You've seen the U.S. kind of, you know, start to prepare and start to discuss what would happen in the event of an attack. You've heard a lot of discussion about potential sanctions that the U.S. would place on Russia if there were to be a Ukrainian invasion. But certainly lawmakers are hoping that it does not get to that point. Once again, I mean, the big picture here is that this has proved a distraction to some degree for President Biden for his ultimate goal of focusing on Beijing and focusing on China. But with these troop buildup at the border, it's something that he and Congress have really had to turn their attention to.
Heading into a very busy week in Washington as President Biden gets set to close out year one this week. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins, thanks for this. You can read more at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal. Listen to Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Sell-off continues for equity futures. S&P futures right now down 52 points. Dow futures down 259. NASDAQ futures are lower by 278 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 8/32. The yield, 1.81%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.02. Bitcoin, $41,800. Bloomberg Surveillance is next. For Karen Moscow, I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg.